This is...
Candyland ain't got nothing on this.
A Captain America movieverse, Ant-Man movieverse, Young Avengers comics fanfic, written by Nox Lunate and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 and features the pairing James Bucky Barnes, Steve Rogers, with additional tags for post-Captain America Civil War, Ignores, Infinity War, and Endgame, cameos, board games, Monopoly, crack, team bonding, Candyland, humor, questionable craft projects, established relationship, happy Steve bingo. Author's notes. For the board game square in my happy Steve bingo. Team Game Night starts, interestingly enough, because of Cassie Lang. Scott Lang shows up at 5:38 on a Tuesday morning and says, "Can you do me a favor?" And Steve, well, he's not good at denying anything to someone who had his back in a superhero civil war. It's just the kind of thing he can't do. Which is how he ends up with 10-year-old Cassandra Lang sitting on his couch, flipping through Steve's cable package, and then navigating into the streaming services that the normal young people have set up for him, watching things that he is sure aren't appropriate for a child. "Are you supposed to be watching?" He frowns, stares at the TV screen for a while, and then finishes. "Whatever this is." There's a man with a chainsaw instead of an arm running around on screen. Steve prays to God that Bucky doesn't see this and get any ideas. "Nope," Cassie says, her eyes glued to the screen.
"Right. Okay. Good to know,"
Steve responds,
unsure how anyone seems to think he can handle children.
When Bucky enters the apartment by way of window, Steve breathes a sigh of relief.
Bucky will know how to deal with children. Bucky had 3 sisters. Sure, he only seems to remember about half of anything these days, but Steve's going to hope that half includes how to handle a 10-year-old.
Bucky stops in the living room, stares at Cassie, turns to stare at Steve, stares back at Cassie, then finally lands on Steve.
"Did I forget something again, or is the kid new?"
"Kid's new," Steve says. Pretty sure Bucky hadn't been entirely serious about forgetting something, but also wanting to make sure he has to deal with confusion as little as possible.
"Scott needed a favor, so we're babysitting Cassie for a couple days." "How the fuck do people keep trusting you to handle children?"
"I've literally been asking myself the same question since she got here." Steve's mostly mastered how to handle teenagers, and he's a little less awkward with actual infants. But Cassie is somewhere in the middle, and Steve's got no idea what to do with that. Bucky, however, seems to have no such issues, as he vaults over the back of the couch and lands in the seat next to Cassie. Cassie seems utterly unfazed.
"We've got board games,"
Bucky says, eyeing the TV and the parade of zombies across it distastefully.
"I like board games,"
Cassie says, eyes finally drawn from the TV. "It'll be more fun if we have another person," Cassie says, as she sets a stack of boxes on the coffee table. And Bucky pulls out his phone and speaks rapidly into it in Russian. A half hour later, Natasha is folded up on the floor, viciously defending the gumdrop pass, as Candyland has somehow merged into a Risk-like game. The 4 of them carving out territories as Cassie makes up a very detailed set of rules for them to follow.
"Rogers,"
Bucky says viciously, waving a metal finger at Steve. If you even think about moving on the Lollipop Woods, I will end you. Worse than that, I will end your sex life. Bucky, there's a child, Steve says, scandalized. I know what sex is, Cassie says, as she mercilessly moves her troops in on Steve's in the licorice forest. Steve sighs as his blue sorry pieces are replaced with Cassie's red. Let's pretend no one said the word sex, huh? Let's just focus on how badly we're all beating Steve, the master strategist, Bucky says, shooting Steve a smug smile. I hate this game, Steve says, slumping down into his seat. I love this game, Cassie says, with all the chaotic energy that Steve has only ever seen in Children and Wade Wilson. Two weeks later, Scott Lang calls again. Hey man, Cassie was just wondering... Wait, Cassie, come on, if you want me to ask, you gotta let me ask. Fine, fine, you do it, Peanut. There's a sound of shuffling, and then the familiar voice of 10-year-old Cassie Lang is heard through Steve's phone. I was wondering if you and Mr. James might want to come over for dinner and to play Life. Steve's phone is being snatched up by a metal hand before Steve can get a word out. We'd love to, sweetheart, Bucky says into the phone, and Steve fights a smile at how easy Bucky sounds. 5 o'clock? Uh-huh. Yep. Uh-huh. Okay, it's a date. A date, huh? Steve asks, once Bucky's hung up the phone and dropped Steve's phone into his lap. Should I be jealous? Oh yeah, Rogers, I've got a new best girl, Bucky says, light and easy, and sounding so stupidly content that it makes Steve feel like he could fill right up with happiness until he's bigger than the biggest skyscraper in Manhattan. Everyone warned me you were fickle. I should have listened. First new thing in this century and you're moving on, Steve says, shaking his head and looking appropriately sad. You're an idiot, Rogers, Bucky says, sliding over the back of the couch and into the spot next to Steve. Once he's there, he makes an exaggerated yawning motion and drops his arm over Steve's shoulders, looking far too pleased with himself. Joke's on you. You've been dating an idiot since 1937. That's the real tragedy of my life, honestly, Bucky says, entirely straight-faced, until Steve shoves at his ribs, and Bucky shuts up any retort Steve might come up with a kiss. They show up at Scott's house with a cool that Scott blinks at for a moment. I told you you didn't have to bring anything, Scott says, even as he takes the casserole dish that Bucky is shoving in his hands. I was brainwashed for 70 years. I can bring Kugel if I want to, Bucky says, as he breezes past Scott and catches a cannonball masquerading as Cassie Lang. Does he use the brainwashing excuse a lot? Scott asks, poking at the top of the Kugel like it might bite him. So, so much, Steve says, with what he's sure is the tone of the truly and deeply tired. Steve shouldn't have expected a normal board game experience when it came to Cassie Lang. Especially not when she had the full endorsement of 250 pounds of metal and charming smiles in the shape of Bucky Barnes. What Steve gets, instead of a normal game of life, is an hour spent hunched over the Lang's kitchen table with a set of colored pencils, creating custom game cards under the firm direction of Bucky and Cassie. No, Steve, she said purple there, not blue. This is a dictatorship, Steve gripes,
setting down the really lovely blue pencil and picking up a purple one. Guess he has freakishly nice art supplies. Steve's almost a little jealous of a 10-year-old. Steve reminds himself very firmly that he has a bank account that could easily cover the cost of Steve buying a whole damn art store, so it's his own damn fault the 10-year-old has nicer stuff than him. Damn right it is. Call us supreme leaders, James and Cassandra. Bucky says, as he prints instructions on a tiny scrap of construction paper in neat handwriting, and hands it to Steve to receive its accompanying artwork. Being a supreme leader sounds like a lot of work, Cassie says, focusing intensely on where she's coloring in a game card of her own. Kid's probably right, Steve says agreeably, catching Bucky's ankle with his own under the table. Clearly, she's got a good head on her shoulders. Steve is forced to admit that Cassie and Bucky's strange version of life is a lot more fun than the normal version. Sure, he and Scott suffer a humiliating defeat at the hands of Bucky, but Steve swears he'll have his revenge. Besides, when Steve gets to see Bucky smile and accept a high five from Cassie, who is already chattering away about the next game they're going to play, it's too hard to feel anything but content. After the whole all-out war over the superhero registration thing, things have seemed to settle into something vaguely approaching normalcy. Steve even willingly sets foot in Stark Tower these days, and he and Tony can be in a room for more than 6 minutes without wanting to rip each other's throats out. It's progress. It's apparently enough progress that all Avengers, past and current, are invited to the Stark Christmas party. Scott, as usual, has brought along Cassie as his plus one. Carol says it's cute. Carol seems to think it's even cuter when Cassie asks if Carol can squash a human head like it's a bug. The party dwindles down until it's mostly just superheroes, and somehow they end up gathered around a Monopoly board. No one's been willing to play Monopoly with Tony Stark since shortly after the Battle of New York. But no one's been faced with the face of Scott Lang's only daughter, either. They play by the rules. Mostly. Sort of. A little. The highlight of the game is, of course, when Steve, Bucky, and Peter team up to bankrupt Tony. Steve will never forget the hopeless look on Stark's face. He thinks he might genuinely treasure it forever and remember it fondly when he can't sleep at night. Yeah, right, Bucky says later, when Steve voices this very thought while they're climbing into bed, and Bucky's shoving at his pillows until they're perfect, and Steve's wiggling until he can drape himself over Bucky like a super soldier blanket. Like you wouldn't wake my ass up claiming that hand jobs are the cure to insomnia next time you can't sleep. Listen, the two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, Steve argues. Definitely not squeaking whatsoever when Bucky pinches at Steve's side. It's just an involuntarily slightly squeak-like noise. Like hell they aren't. You better not be picturing Stark Jr.'s face while I'm jerking you off, Rogers. I don't care how traumatized he looked and how much joy that fills you with. Bucky pinches him again, apparently to emphasize his point, and Steve licks a stripe right across his collarbone, then bites it in retaliation. Trust me, the only thing I want to see when you jerk me off is your ugly mug, Steve says. And even he's a little disgusted by how earnest he sounds. Damn right it is. Bucky agrees, and sets about demonstrating just how true Steve's words had been. Game night becomes something of a thing after that. It's never, ever the exact same group of people. Not when the number of people on Earth, let alone in New York, changes on the regular. And not when the roster is in constant flux as new Avengers emerge and others shuffle off into retirement. It's a good thing, though. Steve insists it's team-building. Bucky insists that giving people the opportunity to battle it out to the point of physical violence over children's games is essential stress relief. Natasha says that both of them are making the exact same point. Steve does not trust the woman who has threatened him with stabbing no less than 7 times over Monopoly. But it's possible she has a point. Somewhere along the years, they create trophies. They start out because Wanda takes some sort of crafting class to help calm her nerves and find her zen, or whatever it is that her and Bruce insist is important. Steve, for his part, has never quite understood that kind of thing. Bucky says it's because Steve is fueled by the opposite of zen. Steve is, according to him, fueled by the white-hot rage of a formerly scrawny son of a bitch, and Zen would just mess with his ability to throw himself out of planes and directly at the people trying to destroy the world. Nevertheless, he does sit down with Wanda and her lumpy papier-mâché trophy to paint the damn thing. They go a little Jackson Pollock on it, flinging every color of paint that Steve has at it, and then painting the base a nice shiny black so that Steve can carefully scrawl Number One Avenger on it in bright white. The trophy becomes a prized possession, and when, a year or so later, it's suggested that they spring for a real one, the idea is met with severe disdain. They like their lumpy, hand-painted trophy, thank you very much, and no new hotshot Avenger is going to convince them to replace it with something shiny and unfamiliar. Steve once wins the trophy for 3 consecutive months. But then Carol comes into town and steals the title in a crushing defeat of Clue. Steve is not smug at all when Bucky beats her the very next week in Tenzi and gloats about it for 3 days straight. The Young Avengers are, well, young. They're too young. They are also horrible, dirty, no-good cheats who resurrect Candyland Risk after years of Steve thinking he'd never experience that level of defeat again, and then proceed to fleece Steve out of an obscene amount of money. Kate Bishop has a mean poker face, and Steve has never seen Clint look so proud. The green kid, and the one who looks almost freakishly like Wanda, team up against the rest of them and nearly sweep the board. Steve's sure the only reason they don't is that they're too distracted with holding hands under the table and pretending they're being discreet about it. Steve's sure that he and Bucky were a lot more subtle when they were that age. They absolutely were not. There can only be one, Bucky says ominously, as he looks between Steve and America, both stubbornly refusing to change out of their patriotic t-shirts. Aren't teenagers supposed to grow out of board games? Steve asks, in an effort to ignore Bucky's quiet humming of the Jaws theme, as he looks between Steve and America. Uncle Steve, there is no growing out of board games, Cassie says with a shake of her head, as she resets up the Candyland board after Kate had kicked it across the room in frustration, and Bucky switches to the Imperial March. I found a game you can win, Rogers, Bucky says a few weeks later, as he throws a piece of brightly colored cardboard and clear plastic at Steve's head. The ultimate gay sex dice is printed across the cardboard in bold rainbow letters. And Steve would groan and tell Bucky he is the goddamn worst. But, well,
This really is a game that Steve can always win.
The end.